Okay. Well, good afternoon, everybody. Thanks for showing up. I guess if you want a title, I've kind of gone all over the place with a title for this. I really don't know. Maybe something along the lines of, you know, who are God's people? That seems to be about as innocuous as I can kind of put that. Given a lot of the things that have been going on around the world, especially in the last year, there's been a lot of things happening, and there's a lot of fighting and anger and things happening around for certain reasons. And so I've kind of been looking at some things, and to give everybody sort of a forewarning, some of this stuff has been perceived as being a little controversial. And that is unfortunate because it really shouldn't be. But it is for some. And so I'm just going to try to go, what can we see written here? What's written? What's in the Bible? And what can we pull out of it? There is an interesting thing. I'm not going to talk about this thing. I'm going to start reading in Psalm 82. And I'm not really going to talk about what's in Psalm 82, although it is incredibly interesting. I'm just going to kind of use it as a kind of a launching pad for where I'm going to head here. And I don't know how long I'm going to speak. I'll probably run fat more than 45 minutes, so I'll keep an eye on this. And it might be in two different recordings. So in Psalm 82, verse 1, says, Psalm of Asaph, God has taken his place in the divine council. Okay, there's different definitions of that word, you know, the divine council. You know, in the midst of the gods, he holds judgment. Okay, that is the council of El. So God has taken his place within the council of El, the gods, and in the midst of the gods, he holds judgment. So there are other gods, and these are not human beings. How long will you judge unjustly and show partiality to the wicked? Give justice to the weak and the fatherless. Maintain the right of the afflicted and destitute. Rescue the weak and the needy. Deliver them from the hand of the wicked. They have neither knowledge nor understanding. They walk about in darkness. All the foundations of the earth are shaken. And I said, you are gods, sons of the Most High, all of you. Nevertheless, like men, you shall die and fall like any prince. Arise, O God, judge the earth, for you shall inherit all the nations. Okay? So, these are, I don't want to call them angels, because I don't know if they're messengers, but these are some sort of spirit beings that are known as sons of God. And he says, they're not doing what they're supposed to be doing, and if you keep it up, you're going to die like men. For all those people to think that spirit beings cannot die. In Psalm 89, verse 5 says, let the heavens praise your wonders, Yehovah, your faithfulness in the assembly of the holy ones. So it was a divine council in Psalm 82. It is the assembly of the holy ones. For who in the skies, okay, human beings are not in the skies. For who in the skies can compare to Yehovah? Who among the heavenly beings is like Yehovah? A God greatly to be feared in the council of the holy ones. And awesome above all who are around him. So this is kind of a very interesting concept. Let's see. And I wrote down a lot of things that I might skip past just for so I don't take too much time. And of course, in Job 1, verse 6. So, you know, I think most people are familiar with this. Now there was a day when the sons of God came to present themselves before Yehovah, and Satan also came among them. Yehovah said to Satan, from where do you come? Satan answered Yehovah and said, from going to and fro on the earth and walking up and down on it. Later in the same book, in Job 38, like 1 to 7, says, then Yehovah answered Job out of the whirlwind and said, who is this that darkens counsel by words without knowledge? Dress for actions like a man. I will question you, and you make it known to me. Where were you when I laid the foundations of the earth? Tell me if you have understanding. Who determined its measurements? Surely you know. Or who stretched the line upon it? On what were its bases sunk? Or who laid its cornerstone when the morning stars sang together and all the sons of God shouted for joy? The sons of God were there when he set the cornerstone of the earth. Again, we're talking about the spirit holy beings here, as it calls them. I'll skip that a little bit here. Sorry about the pauses here. So in Deuteronomy 32, Deuteronomy 32, verse 8, says, when the Most High gave to the nations their inheritance, when he divided mankind, he fixed the borders of the peoples according to the number of the sons of God. Those are the sons of God, the council. He divided the nations among the other gods. But in verse 9 it says, but Yehovah's portion is his people, Jacob is his allotted heritage. So Yehovah set apart Jacob for his own. He divided the other nations among the other gods, but he reserved Jacob, Israel, for himself. And who did God choose? God chose Jacob, who he renamed Israel, due to a promise he made to Jacob's grandfather, Abraham. So, that's where I'm going to kind of launch into, you know, his people. So, now when you talk about God's people, and it says, you know, did Yehovah choose the Jews as his people? Well, we have to look at a few things, and I kind of found this to be rather fascinating, some of this. So you'll find the word Jew and Jews all throughout the Bible, but in the original languages, both in the Hebrew and the Greek, the word Jew is not there. So in the Hebrew, you have a Levi or Levi. So you got the tribe of Levi, and it's Levi would be a Levite. Okay, you have Dan or Don, and it's in the Hebrew it's Dani, which is a Danite, how we translate that to in English. A Gad is a Gadi, that would be a Gadite. Zebulun.
GPS signal lost.
Oh. I guess I don't know where I'm going with this now, so. Zebulon, it would be a Zebulani, a Zebulonite. These are the words I found throughout the Old Testament. You know, I think you're getting the point. So anyway, Manasseh is a Manassite. Israeli would be an Israelite. Canaanite is a Canaanite. So anyway, the word Jew would be a Judahite. It's a Yehudi, because they're from the tribe of Judah, which is Yehuda. So a Yehudi would be translated, if we did it all consistently with all the rest of the tribes, it would be a Judahite. So the Yehudis, the Judahites, were just from the tribe of Judah. That's how it is in the Old Testament. Every time I can find the word Yehuda is Judah, a Yehudi is a Judahite. Yehudim would be Judahites. Ha-Yahudim would be the Judahites. So, would a Yehudi or a Jew be equal with Israel? Is it synonymous with Israel? No, it's not. Everybody should know this, but it's just the tribe. So, for the sake of time, I'll just tell you that in 1 Kings 15, it goes through that whole chapter, is explaining how Israel was at war with the Jews. So, the Israelites were at war with the Yehudites, the Judahites. So they can't be synonymous with it. If they're at war with each other, they can't be the same thing. So Yehudites would be Israelites, but not all Israelites would be Jews, right? So I've already covered that. So since not all Israelites are Jews, because you have to be from the tribe of Judah, was Abraham a Jew? No. Was Abraham's son Isaac one? No. Was Isaac's son Jacob Israel? Was Israel himself a Jew? No. Were any of Jacob or Israel's 12 sons Jews?
Yes.
Well, that's kind of fun. Well, we know for sure 11 of them are no. Yeah. But would the patriarch Judah himself be a Judahite? I guess that's a judgment. Hi, I'm Judah from the tribe of Judahite. You know, population of one. Would his immediate family be Jews, Judahites? Like I said, when does a family become a tribe? I don't know. These are judgment calls I'm above my pay grade to make. But was Moses a Jew? The one that gave him all the laws? No, he was a Levite. Was David a Jew? Yes. He's from the tribe of Judah. Was Yeshua a Jew? Yes. He's from the tribe of Judah. The physical people that were Judahites were Israelites, but not all Israelites were Judahites. Okay? To somehow conflate Jews and Israel together, you'd have to pretty much toss out 90% of the rest of Israel. That'd be like, I don't know, that'd be like California saying we're America and none of the other states matter. So, that's similar, I guess. So, interestingly, and this is what kind of brought this to my attention, the word Jew is used differently in the Old Testament than it is in the New Testament. They're just used differently. And so I looked that up, and thanks to the Greek language being the nightmare circus that it is, there's a lot of variations to these words. But it all comes down to kind of one main word. The land that surrounded Jerusalem in the time of the New Testament, when Yeshua was on the earth, it was a region known as Judea. Or Judea. And it's not a stretch of the imagination. That was pretty much the land that was allocated to the tribe of Judah. And it later just became known as the region. It was just Judea. So, in the Greek, the word for Judah is Euda. And Judea is Iudea. So the word that's mostly translated as Jew in the New Testament is Iudeos, which technically translates to a Judean. They were from Judea, they're Judeans. When you see the word Jews in the New Testament, it is a Judean. Just like Rome, the Greek word for Rome is Rome. Romeos is a Roman. So Iuda is Judah, Iudea is Judea, an Iudeos is a Judean. A Romeos is a Roman. And since Judea is the name of the region at this point, it's not set aside for the specific tribe. There's a lot of things that have happened between the Old Testament and the New, and there were other tribes living in Judea. Well, first of all, we have a priesthood, so you know Levi is represented there. Paul says here in Romans 11:1, I ask then, has God rejected his people? By no means, for I myself am an Israelite, a descendant of Abraham, a member of the tribe of Benjamin. So there's Benjaminites there. Yeah, this lady Anna in Luke 2:36, there was a prophetess, Anna, the daughter of Phanuel, of the tribe of Asher. So there's at least one person from Asher there. So, was Paul a Jew?
He's a Benjaminite.
But in the New Testament, he's a Judean. So it doesn't allocate to just the tribes anymore. It's people from the region. So in Philippians 3:3, it says, for we are the circumcision who worship by the Spirit of God and glory in Christ Jesus and put no confidence in the flesh. Though I myself have reason for confidence in the flesh also, if anyone else thinks he has reason for confidence in the flesh, I have more. Circumcised on the eighth day of the people of Israel, of the tribe of Benjamin, a Hebrew of Hebrews, as to the law, a Pharisee. So, he's kind of running down kind of given his resume of who he is, said in Acts, I don't want to get too far ahead, but in Acts 21:37 says, as Paul was about to be brought into the barracks, he said to the tribune, may I say something to you? And he said, do you know Greek? He's like, are you not the Egyptian then, who recently stirred up a revolt and led the 4,000 men of assassins out into the wilderness? Paul replied, I am a Jew from Tarsus in Cilicia, a citizen of no obscure city. I beg you, permit me to speak to the people. He's a Jew because he's a Judean, lives in Judea. Because he said twice that he's from the tribe of Benjamin. So, like I said, the word is, there's a shift there. And I work, he says he's, you know, I'm a Hebrew of Hebrews. So I just quickly, I looked up Hebrew, since I'm just looking up words here. The word Hebrew there is Hebraios. And just like Romeos would be a Roman, and Iudeos would be a Judean, Hebraios is a Hebraean. And in the Hebrew language, it's, most people know it comes from Eber, you know. The word Hebrew is an Ebri, which would actually be translated as a Hebrewite. I just thought that was interesting, and it's consistent with everything else. So, so in Acts 22:22, says, up to this word, they listened to him. Then they raised their voices and said, away with such a fellow from the earth, for he should not be allowed to live. And as they were shouting and throwing off their cloaks and flinging dust in the air, the tribune ordered him to be brought into the barracks, saying that he should be examined by flogging to find out why they were shouting against him like this. But when they had stretched him out for the whips, Paul said to the centurion who was standing by, is it lawful for you to flog a man who is a Roman citizen and uncondemned? When the centurion heard this, he went to the tribune and said to him, what are you about to do? For this man is a Roman citizen. So the tribune came and said to him, tell me, are you a Roman citizen? He said, yes. The tribune answered, I bought this citizenship for a large sum, Paul said, but I am a citizen by birth. Paul's a lot of things here. He's of the circumcision. He's descendant of Abraham. He's an Israelite. He's a Benjamite. He's a Hebrew. He's a Pharisee. He's a Judean. And born in Tarsus, which made him a Roman citizen. But he's not a Jew by Old Testament definition of the word. He's all those things, but he's not a Judahite. He's a Benjamite. So what then would make a Jew now? So there's a lot of terms, and we obviously have shifts and things that have gotten us to the modern days. So how would either of these things really pertain to people living now? The Old Testament is pretty straightforward. Someone from the tribe of Judah, or at least lived in that land with Judah. But those definitions and parameters are rarely mentioned during someone that is Jewish now. Because what got me kind of started on this, because I was interested to know how modern Jews trace their Jewishness back. And I've had a very difficult time trying to find a solid answer on that, just to be honest with everybody. So is it determined, you know, how are we determining this? Is it race? Is it genealogy? Is it ethnicity? Is it culture? Is it nationality or regionality? Or, you know, is it just religion? I've looked up a lot of sources, and it's all over the map. Some just say yes. Some say it's some of them, some say this, some say a different combination of them. So it's very difficult to pin anything down. So as far as race is concerned, first of all, you'd have to define race, and that led down a whole nother rabbit hole. So if anybody can find a definition of what race is, let me know. There's not a solid agreed upon definition, but we kind of have an idea. It usually has physical attributes, right? So skin color, eye shape, hair color, type, that kind of stuff. And I've heard a lot of people refer to the Jewish race. But many people have asked that, well, how can it be the Jewish race when you have all these different races that are Jews? So I looked up something from the Anne Frank House. They have a website. And quoting from Anne Frank House, racism is based on the idea that there are different human races. The ideas of Hitler and the Nazis were racist. After the Second World War, science showed that the classification of humanity into different races is wrong. There's only one race, the human race. Okay. And then I found this site called MyJewishLearning.com. Quoting from there, Jews are not a race. People who identify as Jewish include individuals of enormously diverse geographic origins and physical appearances, making the idea that Jews could easily be designated a race in the sense of shared physical or biological characteristics implausible. The idea of race, whether applied to Jews or another group, is itself a problem, generally used today to denote categories of people based on certain shared characteristics. Typically physical appearance, this method of categorization was once prevalent in the scientific community, but many scientists now believe that differentiating human populations on the basis of shared physical traits is obsolete, and that racial categories are primarily social constructs with little correlation to anything science can measure. If that were not the case, on the basis of the definition above, Jews would not qualify as a race. Yeah. Two Jewish sources, basically in agreement, it's not a race. However, there's an article, and there's many like it, there's an article on this place called theconversation.com. The title alone should tell you where it's headed. Anti-Semitism isn't just Jew hatred, it's anti-Jewish racism. So how could... If all the Jews agree that it's not a race, then how is something like anti-Semitism racism? There's a lot of conflicting things on all this. So you're not determined by race, but being against them is racism. So it doesn't fit. As far as genealogy, this would be more along the lines. It's kind of what's explained in the Old Testament because it would be from the tribe of Judah. But this comes with its own set of issues and questions for me. So if you know, there's a bunch of, I don't want to get into the weeds too much with this, but there's just you know, playing semantics with it all. So if you have somebody from the tribe of Judah, and let's just say a guy from Judah marries a woman from one of the other tribes. You know, pick one. Dan. He marries a woman from Dan. Tribe of Dan. Now, does she become a Judahite because she married in? Or is she still considered from the tribe of Dan? And if they have kids, are they half Judahites, half Danites? And how does that all go? I won't trace it back, but you know, the guy Mordecai, he was a Jew, says that he's a Judahite, but his great great grandfather was a Benjamite. So there's intermixing of the tribes. So I don't know if it starts with just the tribe itself, and or maybe it's somebody who just moves into their area or something, marries in. I don't know. I don't know all the little ins and outs of it, but it's pretty straightforward that it's connected with the tribe of Judah. And then when you get to modern days, according to the Orthodox Jewish law, you're considered Jewish only if your mother was Jewish. So your mother is where you would get your Jewishness from. There was a survey I watched with an individual, and he was kind of going around the streets, and he was interviewing Jewish people, and his question was, my father was Jewish, but my mother was not. He said, am I considered Jewish? And overwhelmingly, the answers were no. They don't consider you Jewish, because your mother has to be Jewish, which, again, comes with another whole set of questions, like... if it has to come from your mother's side, well, then the whole thing is off then, because all the patriarchs are where the tribe started. So you can't, it can't come from your mother. It comes from your father, as far as the Bible is concerned. That's completely opposite of the way the Bible describes it. There really wouldn't even be any tribes at all if that was the way it was. The story of Ruth is an interesting one. So Ruth was not a Jew, as in she's not a Judahite. And she wasn't even an Israelite. She was a Moabite. And in Ruth 1, starting in 16, or just Ruth 1:16, Ruth said, "Do not urge me, to leave you or to return from following you. For where you go, I will go, and where you lodge, I will lodge. Your people shall be my people, and your God, my God." Now, further on in Ruth 4, let's look what happens here. So in Ruth 4:13, so Boaz took Ruth, and she became his wife. And he went into her, and the Lord gave her conception, and she bore a son. Then the woman said to Naomi, "Blessed be the Lord, who has not left you to this day without a redeemer, and may his name be renowned in Israel. He shall be to you a restorer of life and a nourisher of your old age. For your daughter-in-law who loves you, who is more to you than seven sons, has given birth to him." Then Naomi took the child, laid him on her lap, and became his nurse. And the women of the neighborhood gave him a name, saying, "A son been born to Naomi." They named him Obed, who was the father of Jesse, the father of David. The genealogy of David, these were the generations of Perez. Perez fathered Hezron. Hezron fathered Ram. Ram fathered Amminadab. Amminadab fathered Nahshon. Nahshon fathered Salmon. Salmon fathered Boaz. Boaz fathered Obed. Obed fathered Jesse. Jesse fathered David. So if your genealogy came from your mother, it would have stopped at Ruth. But Ruth's line is where David came from, and it's also eventually, ultimately, where Yeshua came from. So, if your Jewishness or your lineage comes from your mother's side, that would make God either a liar or wrong in this such situation. Plus, it's kind of weird that, like, let's say just to throw this out here, let's say a guy that was not Jewish but a woman was, they have twins, one's a boy, one's a girl. They would be considered Jewish because their mother was. And let's say the two twins, the boy and the girl, they have children. The girls' kids would be considered Jewish, but the boy's kids would not, because he married someone outside of, you know, it just, there's weird things with all of this. Plus, I just have a whole lot of information. I'm trying to wrangle it together as I'm going. You know, as far as genealogy is concerned, that would kind of appear to be how the Old Testament determines whether someone was a Judahite or not. But there's some interesting things with that. So last year, Kellen had to do a family tree project at one, the school that he kind of goes to a couple of days a week. And I thought that was kind of, you know, it's kind of nice, but it's also, it seemed kind of weird to me that they would do that. I mean, what about the poor kid that doesn't know anything about his, you know, ancestry? But at that time, that very week, and of course they're saying you need to use ancestry.com. They kind of pushed that on us. Well, that very week, wouldn't you know, BlackRock bought ancestry.com. And if you don't know what BlackRock is, they are one of three of the biggest corporations to ever exist, and they own pretty much everything you've ever heard of. The other two are State Street and Vanguard. So, and so we started looking up our lineage, you know, whatever you want to call it, and it, you know, basically just tracing the name back. Well, My past, which is mostly German and Scottish, it got to the, like, my grandfather's mom on my dad's side, and she was a Wallace, and then the Wallace family goes back and you know, traces it to the Boones and all this other stuff. So the point I'm making is, my dad told me that his grandma was adopted by the Wallace family. So she's not a blood Wallace. And that whole, so that chops off that entire branch. And nobody would have known that unless you just happened to know it. I'm three generations removed from it, and I didn't know it. I had to be told. So how accurate is all of this stuff when right out of the gate, it just, there's an entire line that goes back, and it's not blood at all. It was there for an adoption. And, of course, that was the only line that had anything of any interest in some cool or whatever. But, you know, there's just links. And like I said, nobody would know that. I mean, you all know it now. And BlackRock knows it, I guess, since I just said it. They're listening. So say hi to BlackRock, everybody. I'm sure they're tying in. And I was talking about this yesterday a little bit, so it's kind of a fun exercise. I'll try to explain this because I've tried to do this before and I've lost people. So until maybe a couple years ago, we all knew that it took one man and one woman to have a baby, right? Okay. So everybody has two parents. So you go back one generation. Okay, I needed two parents. Okay, well, they needed two parents. So you have two parents, then you have four grandparents, then you have eight great-grandparents, and then you have 16 great-great-grandparents. Okay. So for this little exercise, I just kind of took an average, like, let's just say you have four generations in a century. I don't think that's too hard to imagine. Okay, so maybe about the age of 25, people have a kid. Okay, and that's probably maybe conservative. Maybe they're having them younger than that. But just for this exercise, so let's say it's someone in the year 2000, okay, to go back 100 years, 19, to his great-great-grandparents, he has to go back to the 1900s, 100 years ago, it took 16 people for him to exist, okay, 16 great-great-grandparents. Okay, of course, they need, all those people need two parents, so you go back 100 years to 1800, it would have took 256 people for you to exist. Go back another 100, now we're up to 4,096 people. You can see this number is getting, it's going to start getting big. So another 100 years, so that's 1, 2, 3, 400 years. That'd be 16 generations. It would have took 65,500 people. Another one, we're up into the millions now, so 1,048 and some change. We're back to 600 years. It would have took 16,000, more, almost 17,000. We're about at the time of, if somebody was born in 2000, we're about at the year of 1300. So he would have needed 465,456 ancestors for one person. And that number gets into 4 billion 100 years before that. We're only like the year 1200 now, okay? 4 billion and almost 4.3 billion people. And one more, we're now down to like, and I stopped here. In the year 1100, it would have required 68.7 billion people. That is 8.5 times what they say the current population of Earth is. These numbers do not pan out, okay? So either one, the Earth was way more populated back then than we were told, and possibly the number they're saying now is off too, or we're all more connected than we think we are. Like, that family tree has to kind of, as Steve was saying, that's got to kind of curl back in at some point, right? So there's, and if you go the other direction, where am I at on my time? You know, people talk about full-blooded this or full-blooded that. So let's say, you know, a full-blooded Cherokee or something. Well, let's just use for an example. Let's say he, the full-blooded Cherokee man, marries outside, marries a non-Cherokee woman. Okay? Well, obviously, if they have kids, they're going to be half-Cherokee. And if they have kids, let's say he's the last Cherokee into that line. Their kids are half. His grandkids are a quarter. And his great-grandkids are, an eighth. So if you keep going on that line, it takes about three, four, five. You go four generations to the future. The kids are 6.25%. Another 100 years, we're down lower than 1% now. 300 years of generations. We are now at 0.025%. Which that's just a little bit more of what came up with Elizabeth Warren's Cherokee test. So I only went like 500 years here, and it's 0.0000095. I don't know if you can even detect that. So we were talking before, like, yeah, after about eight generations, the DNA is pretty much non-determinable. Your ancestors from about eight generations ago, their genealogy, their DNA or whatever is like not even on yours anymore. Anyway, that was a long little diversion there to basically say it's impossible to trace your genealogy. I don't think we have Abraham's DNA on file anywhere. So there's a lot to do with culture with this stuff too. So, culture seems to be a main factor in today in modern times. There's all kinds of interesting and fun cultural aspects that the Jews have, but I don't know how far you could trace that back to certain things. I doubt King David wore a yarmulke, but maybe he did. I don't know. Just a personal observation for me. It's interesting to me that with the dress of kind of the more orthodox Jews out there, their pants and their jackets and even their hats and hair kind of reminds me of, I don't want to say Amish, but kind of like the Dunkers or Quakers, kind of like the Puritans. And I think some of that makes sense because there is a group of Ashkenazi Jews that are in Israel, and they're Jewish converts from Germany. And like I said, there's all races and all different kinds. So culture seems to be big, but their cultures come, it's a mixed bag. And some is very interesting. Religion is a big one. So in Galatians 1:11, For I would have you know, brothers, that the gospel that was preached by me is not man's gospel. For I did not receive it from any man, nor was I taught it, but I received it through the revelation of Jesus Christ. For you have heard of my former life in Judaism, how I persecuted the church of God violently and tried to destroy it. And I was advancing in Judaism beyond many of my own age among my people. So extremely zealous was I for the traditions of my fathers. Now, Judaism is, like I said, if Iudeos is a Jew, is a Judean, this word is Iudesimos, and that is a religion or the character and condition of the Judeans. This is the definition of that word, which Paul said he is no longer. It was my former life in Judaism. In Titus 1:10, For there are many who are insubordinate, empty talkers, and deceivers, especially those of the circumcision party. They must be silenced, since they are upsetting whole families by teaching for shameful gain what they ought not to teach. One of the Cretans, a prophet, this gets a little interesting. One of the Cretans, a prophet of their own, said, "Cretans are always liars, evil beasts, and lazy gluttons. This testimony is true. Therefore, rebuke them sharply, that they may be sound in the faith, not devoting themselves to Jewish myths and the commands of people who turn away from the truth. To the pure, all things are pure, but to the defiled and unbelieving, nothing is pure. But both their minds and their consciences are defiled. They profess to know God, but they deny them by their works. They are detestable, disobedient, and unfit for any good work. Now, that's pretty good scathing there. So I looked up Jewish myths. And by the way, this is the one and only time I found the word Jewish in the Bible. Jewish here is, I'm not even going to try to pronounce it, but it is based off of that same Eudaios word. But if it was translated consistently with other words, it would be Judaic. That would be the word it would use. And its definition is resembling a Judean. So the definition and the way this is kind of brought about, Jewish myths, it's just more like it resembles something of Jewishness, but it's fables, it's myths. That Jewish, like I said, it's the only time I found it in the Bible, in the English translations that I have. It's almost like, since it resembles a Judean, the word Jewish almost sounds exact, the way it's used almost sounds exactly the way it is. It's Jew, it's not Jew, it's Jewish. Like, we're gonna meet at noon? Well, no, noonish. It's kind of Jewish sounding myths. These are myths that are, you know, have an appearance of being a Judean, but it's not. In Mark 7, and you know what? I'm in like 41 minutes. I am going to just cut it off here so I don't have one long part and then a really short part. So, quick pause, and I'll be back for part two. Okay.
You're going to reset. No.
All right. Well, welcome back, everybody, to part two, the long-awaited sequel. So, we're going to start here in Mark 7, Mark 7, 1. Now, when the Pharisees gathered to him with some of the scribes who had come from Jerusalem, they saw that some of his disciples ate with his hands that were defiled, that is, unwashed. For the Pharisees and all the Jews, Judeans, do not eat unless they wash their hands properly, holding to the tradition of the elders. And when they came from the marketplace, they do not eat unless they wash. And there are many other traditions that they observe, such as the washing of cups and the pots and the copper vessels. Verse 5 of Mark 7. And the Pharisees and the scribes asked him, "Why do your disciples not walk according to the tradition of the elders, but eat with defiled hands?" And he said to them, "Well did Isaiah prophesy of you hypocrites, as it is written, 'This people honors me with their lips, but their heart is far from me. In vain they do worship me, teaching as doctrines the commandments of men.' You leave the commandment of God and hold the tradition of men." And he said to them, "You have a fine way of rejecting the commandment of God in order to establish your tradition." Mark 7:10, "For Moses said, 'Honor your father and your mother,' and whoever reviles father or mother must surely die. But you say, 'If a man tells his father or mother, whatever you would gain from me is Corban, that is, given to God,' then you no longer permit him to do anything for his father or mother, thus making void the word of God by your tradition that you have handed down. And many things like this, many such things you do." What are these traditions? What are these commandments and traditions of men? It's the traditional Jewish law. It's the oral law, the law that they claim was given to them by mouth, by the word of God, that was never written down. It has been eventually typed out, and it's the Talmud. Now, if you ever want to try to read the Talmud, my one piece of advice is good luck. It is like a gigantic encyclopedia. It's a pretty rough read, and you know, it's huge. And those that train to do it, it takes them 7 years. That's the typical, you know, for doing the everyday study of it. It takes them 7 years to go through it once. And I admit there's some gnarly things written in there. That these are the teachings that Judaism, the religion, is built on. And the large majority of those that practice Judaism hold the Talmud in a higher regard than they do the Torah or the Tanakh, and they believe whatever is stated in the Talmud supersedes and trumps anything that's written in the Bible. So if being a Jew is determined by religion, that would have to be the religion of Judaism, which is a religion based on the writings that Yeshua says almost nothing positive about. In fact, he refers to them as man-made traditions that go contrary to God. I didn't say that. Yeshua did. So as far as a Jew is, what is as far as biblical definition of a Jew? Okay. Old Testament, come from the tribe of Judah. Case closed. I can ask 100 questions about all the little intricacies of it, but that's what it is. New Testament, they're Judeans. They're Judeans because they come from Judea. And Judea is what was left in the region of the nation of Israel. And Israel was the nation that Yahovah, as we read at the beginning of this, decided to use as his model nation, that I'm going to set these people apart for myself. And I'm going to be their God personally. But it's not limited to Israel. Okay? Because just like, I'll just read this. I apologize for how scattered this all is. Romans 10, verse 9. Romans 10, 9. Because if you confess with your mouth that Jesus is Lord, and believe in your heart that God raised him from the dead, you will be saved. For with the heart one believes and is justified, and with the mouth one confesses and is saved. For the scripture says everyone who believes in him will not be put to shame. For there is no distinction between Jew and Greek, for the same Lord is Lord of all, bestowed his riches on all who call on him. For everyone who calls on the name of the Lord will be saved. Right there in verse 12, where it says there is no distinction between Jew and Greek, obviously that word is Judean, but even just looking at it, Jew and Greek, that should pretty much tell you that it's not a religion, because both Jew and Greek, that'd be like saying, you know, there's no distinction between, you know, Christians and the Canadians. You know, it's one nation versus another. For those listening to this, I'll let the record show that over half my audience has come down from Canada. So maybe there is a distinction anymore between Christians and Canadians. So, but it's not open to just the Jews or the Judeans. Like I said, the Judeans are what's left of Israel. They're Israel. I was going to call it the remnant, but that has already been dedicated for something else. So it's the people God has chosen, but it's not limited to them. It's open to Judeans, it's open to Greeks, it's open to Gentiles, the rest of the nations. Everybody can be adopted into it. Everybody, you know, people use, like, they'll use the word grafted in. You can be grafted in. So if you... I'm going to look at this for just a second. I'll just go ahead and read this. Romans 3:27. Then what becomes of our boasting? It is excluded. By what kind of law? By a law of works? No, but the law of faith. For we hold that one is justified by faith apart from works of the law. Or is it God, you know, verse 29, or is God the God of Jews only? Is he not the God of Gentiles also? Yes, of Gentiles also. Since God is one, who will justify the circumcised by faith and the uncircumcised through faith? Do we then overthrow the law by this faith? By no means. On the contrary, we uphold the law. There is one God over the Jews, and he's not just the God of the Jews, the Judeans. He's the God of the Gentiles, all the rest of the nations as well. And anybody that wants to adopt themselves in, graft themselves in, can be, as long as they worship God and follow his laws. That's what it says. And this is not a New Testament concept. We just went through the story of Ruth, who was not even connected to Israel at all. And she is a direct line in the genealogy of the Son of God. So, what is God's people? Like, who are God's people here? You know, if you want to know what the Bible talks about as a Jew, again, who are the Jews as far as Scripture is concerned? A Jew is a Judean. A Judean is what's left over of Israel. Israel's God's nation that he chose to work with. And anybody that Anybody that is part of that nation that doesn't follow his laws is cut off from that nation, so it's no longer, they're no longer an Israelite. And anyone that does worship God and keep his law is grafted in and adopted and is an Israelite. So God's people are ultimately those who worship him and follow his laws. And that's all I have.